podcast dedicated to the health of the cycling industry.
Not a lot of people had that tone that just said, ride whatever bike you want to ride.
Try to really focus and make sure the rider has a great experience.
There's a couple of things about building a custom bike.
What these e-bikes can do,
the customer just wouldn't take no for an answer kind of thing.
So I think in a way we're in a sweet spot where we don't have all this stuff tying us down.
We just discussed about making the cycling industry more welcoming for women.
Their bike mechanic was right there on the floor.
Something that Weir has really done well in the last couple of years is driven by rock and roll.
It's quite hard for them to train when they don't know what they're training for.
Since again, we believe that our bodies are very smart.
We definitely tend to look forward a lot more.
I started to demystify things.
But if you don't have the right staff, that's game over.
You're not selling at that point, you're educating.
Our intent is to educate both motorists and cyclists.
With the coronavirus, we're all stuck at home. It's kind of like an epic long bring your kids to work day. Big shout out to my little one, Isla, jumping in there to do the intro. Gosh, I love these podcasts. I also love this roasty coffee that keeps me going. This next one is with Heather Mason, and she's got multiple roles with the Bianchi Bicycles USA office. She's business development, she's an ambassador program coordinator, and also does regional sales management for the East Coast. What I really, really enjoyed about our conversation, and we went off the rails entirely, is we talked a lot about the columns that she's writing with respect to retail strategy and the work that she does as a retail and brand consultant. And it's the interview I've really wanted to conduct for a long time, from the beginning of the podcast, because this is the kind of work that I enjoy doing, but I do it with much less experience than Heather. So we talk a lot about her career as a cyclist, and we dive into, again, how companies and bike shops can really maximize click and collect during COVID-19. So a ton of strategy that applies to both and after this lockdown, so to speak. So I'm going to let Heather do all the talking because she does it so well. So again, my guest today, Heather Mason, and I'll let her take it away. Heather, it's early in the morning and you've just gotten back from a ride. Thanks for being my guest this morning.
Oh, thank you. I'm very excited to chat with you. I look forward to it. Yeah.
So I just want to start off just a little bit of a bio on yourself, from your pro racing career to the work you're doing with Bianchi.
Yeah. So I started riding when I was a teenager. My father was awesome and he got the whole family into the sport. Originally mountain biking, but then, you know, I turned to road riding and triathlon. I loved riding. I became really good at it and I liked the endurance side of it. Along the way, I did a 24-hour race and I did really well. And I ended up getting sponsored by Specialized Bicycles. And that career launched what would be a lifelong career in the cycling industry for me. Not many people know I actually went to college for culinary arts, which sometimes I use my degree. Because I was racing bikes, I started working in a bike shop, and then I eventually became the manager of that location, you know, large staff, multi-door bicycle retail shop. I opened my own shop, and that's how I kind of really just dove right into the industry. I fell in love with bicycle sales and getting people set up on the bikes that are right for them. I started working for Eddie Merckx Cycles along the way. I helped launch the USA company for them, national sales lead. And then 3 years ago, I was fortunate enough to connect with Bianchi Bicycles. And I am in charge of their Eastern United States business development, as well as running a women's program, which is an ambassador program. In addition to that, because I've been in so many bicycle shops, you know, over the years, thousands of shops, working so closely with the owners, I've really taken a keen interest in helping bicycle retail IBDs develop their business strategy and sell to consumers. You know, I missed having my own shop. So I took all this information that I was gaining from all these individual retailers and decided to help. And I've used my voice by writing a column for Bicycle Retail, the industry publication, you know, sharing different ideas and different aspects that our industry faces. And it's gaining some popularity, which I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, well, let's just dive into some of those articles, because I've obviously, you know, begun reading them and learning a lot from your work. Myself, having just been in just a few shops, I find that when a bike shop is healthy and profitable and sticks around for the long haul, the community at large, in terms of cycling, becomes just more healthy and passionate. In Edmonton, where I am, we had three bike shops close in just under two calendar years. So we lost three bike shops, but at the same time, we gained two. And the two that we gained were additional locations. So it just, it tells an interesting story that these standalones couldn't survive for whatever reason. Some of them have been around for a long time. But then others were doing well enough, doing something right per se, to be able to open up additional locations for themselves. But I just want to talk about sales for a second. And you talked about your work, with Eddie Merck and leading the national sales team and doing different things. Two articles come to mind. First, we're recording here late April 2020. The world is completely upside down, and the bike shop is doing all that it can to stay relevant and profitable. You wrote an article called Click Collect and Home Delivery and Customers for Life. And you talked about one of the downsides of sort of the click and collect is the add-on sales of being able to add, bottle cages and maybe computers and pumps and everything else. Can you talk a little bit about how you would, advise a retailer to see what they can do on add-ons and deal with that downside of click and collect?
Yeah. So, just touching back to when you said bike shops are closing and other ones are opening, and the bike shop is like, it has to be the heart of the community, right? And I feel like the retailers that are doing it right are the heart of the community. And now with everything that's happening in our world, the bike shops that are still open are really filling what I would say is essential needs. There's so many people that are finding the bike as a tool to recreate now. And we want to keep those cyclists, and we're trying to figure out ways to get bikes to them or to safely deliver a new bike to them. And click and collect is a way that people could do that. And for those not familiar with that, it would be purchasing the bike online and then picking it up curbside or outside the bicycle shop. And that is a really nice option for people who don't want to like lug their kids out of their car or are, don't want to put themselves in the risk of going into a bike shop. It's also a great opportunity for the bike shop who doesn't want to invite people into the shop right now. But all those add-on sales that you're pointing out that I spoke about in that article, we don't want to lose those, right? So we need to either do one of two things. Have a website that is smart enough and developed enough that we can have the website suggest these add-on sales during the checkout process, or have a staff trained or a staff member trained that handles these orders that can call the person up that ordered the bike and say, listen, I need to talk to you about some things that we really recommend you buy with your bicycle: a helmet, a water bottle cage, a pump. I love seeing more people get on bikes right now, but I want to create cyclists for life. And I firmly believe that the only way we can do that is making sure they have the tools that make their ride the best ride possible. And that's all those things. We don't want them to get on the side of the road without a multi-tool, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I think, and you said it, what if the click and collect customer is getting back into cycling, right? For whatever reason, maybe their local gym is closed and they're not on, they don't have the capability to go and work out. What happens if they're not familiar with cross chaining or, local laws with respect to a bell, a bicycle bell? And I think we talk about, a trained technician setting up the bike and doing just sort of a quick visual fit. That part of it is going to be missing from click and collect as well.
Yeah. And I did address on this in an article I wrote to my retailers the other day. It's not a time where we can say, this is good enough, or it's not a time that we can say we're too busy, so we can't do this the right way. Because if I'm a new rider and I go pick up my fitness bike and the saddle's too low, or I don't know how to shift the first time I get to that hill, I'm going to hate cycling, right? If we can't do it in person, there are so many tools online that are valuable that we could, or we could print out a little brochure and give it to the person, with the bike sale that goes over gear adjustment and when to shift. But we have to somehow be creative in these new ways. And I think a lot of retailers are, but it's a time when we're so busy that it's easy to forget.
A smart enough website to suggest like-minded items, or the follow-up with a trained sales staff, which leads me to my next question, because your article, Building the Best Team for Retail Success, talked about having the right fit. And I'm sure that any bike shop owner or service manager listening, they know when they've got not just one all-star on the team, but a whole cohesive team of all-stars on the floor, and they can feel comfortable leaving the shop for the afternoon. Can you talk about, you know, shops that you've worked with and consulted with in terms of bringing sales training and any internal sales processes that have been implemented and role playing that's in sales? Because I find sales to be a very performing art. Can you talk a little bit about just the art form of selling and how important that is to a bike shop employee?
There are people that excel at sales, and we know who they are. There's those superstars out there, right? But retail as a whole, I feel that you get a new person on staff and you train them to your shop environment. And then after the first couple of weeks of training, you let them loose, right? That's like one of the worst things you could possibly do. Because people can be trained in sales for sure. But the biggest thing is they feel like they're working towards something bigger, and you keep that sales going. A lot of shops that find success with this have a weekly staff meeting, or every Saturday before they open, they have a team rally. And honestly, you always need to go to the basics. So that's the four components of a sale. It's so simple, right? But it's something that we forget about. So it's like, it starts with the greeting, right? Then qualifying the customer, figuring out why they come in to the store and what they need. And then you find the item, and you have to show the features and the benefits and being excited about it. And then the closure. And it's like simple stuff like that. But in the bicycle retail environment, a lot of people think it's just a fun place to work at. And it's just, oh, we're riding bikes, we're talking bikes all day, right? But there is an art form of sales that if you continually connect with your staff and remind them of what they're doing, just the simple technique of it, and remind them to subject themselves into the sale and be a real person. And you know, you're looking to create another cyclist, and you have to remember the first person that you spoke to when you walked into a bike shop and that impression that it made on you. Getting people to genuinely care. But it's a process. It's not just a 2-week training and letting someone go. It's coming back to the basics all the time and reminding your staff why we're doing it, and to be genuine. Because when someone truly cares about something, you can tell, and people want to buy from people that are genuine and honest and real.
The podcast is caffeinated by Roasty Coffee Company, a small batch coffee roaster and cafe in Sherwood Park, Alberta. They now offer free home delivery in the Edmonton area and free shipping Canada-wide on orders over $36. Check them out at roasty.ca. That's roasty.ca, and order yourself some. So thanks, guys, for keeping us caffeinated. That's very true. And I think you said, you know, you have to train the individual to match the sales or the sort of the shop culture and environment. And I tour bike shops a lot, but I come in unannounced just as a customer and get a feel for the overall vibe. Well, you know, how do people connect with me? You know, does the mechanic actually 180 degree turn and talk to me and face me, or how is the shop laid out? And I think that's super important. You get a vibe right away. The way it's merchandised and everything, I think is super important. But talking retail strategy for a second, under normal conditions, obviously not corona type conditions, you know, are there successful bike shops that you've worked with that have increased revenues given the low margins they face? And how is things such as inventory and footprint and awareness being addressed in normal conditions, I would say?
Yeah, right. So this is like one of the biggest things that our industry does talk about, because the bicycle industry margins are low, right? And retailers are always trying to figure out how to be successful and keep pumping on. And there's bike shops closing at a drastic rate. It's a real thing. It's reality. So you have to be a smart retailer. We used to have a lot of people just open up bike shops because it was a dream of theirs. They love the bicycle, but you have to be a business person too. And a great strategy is to choose your products carefully. So nothing experimental. So you know, as easy as a bike shop owner to be like, oh, that bike looks really cool, I want one of those and bring it to the store because I like it. But it might not be what is going to sell. And with that, if you bring in something that's flashy, but it doesn't turn over, it sits on the floor, you can't reinvest that money. So bringing in stuff that is a sure sale, product that's going to turn over quickly so you can reinvest it. The best shops are getting like 4 to 5 turns. So they're bringing in, you know, a hybrid and, you know, throughout the season, selling 4 more of them. And then working with suppliers, you know, it's about your relationship with your suppliers. So if you work with bicycle brands or distributors that you communicate with often and you're up to date on their inventory, there's a lot of, you know, special, you know, older inventory or special things that you can get your hands on. And not only help the people in your community by being able to offer a good deal, but make more money. Or you pay attention as a retailer, you're always looking at prepaid deductions or freight deductions because the freight adds up so quickly. You know, the margin on a bicycle is one thing, but then when you add the cost of assembly, of shipping, and then, you know, of cardboard or trash removal, there's a lot of things there that add up. And you can't give discounts. For some reason, everyone thinks the bicycle industry is a place that you can go into and get a bro deal. But I hate to say that, but you have to stay firm, you know, and it's not about discounting service. It's a time where you should show the value of what you're doing. You know, the art form of repairing a bicycle, it's worth a good rate. And I think shops that are succeeding are showing that they care about their community and that they're honest and that they offer you good products and that's not at a discount and it's being a smart person.
Yeah, I think you said it best. I mean, we know that service isn't sold online, that the art form of fixing a bike is important. And I know Karen, who was with The New Wheel in her podcast with, she talked about how much more education and service goes into an e-bike. And again, The New Wheel is specifically e-bike, has always been, always will be. And yet customers are having to maybe come back because brake pads need to be replaced on a bike that for them is the most expensive bike they've ever purchased. Yet components have been sort of skimped on. And that is a shock to them. But I'm willing to bet that her and her team have built such a good rapport, have put such value on their service and education that sort of cognitive dissonance of that purchase and this issue for brake pads is kind of softened a little bit. Some of the best bike shops that I've ever seen have a really good floor layout, and the staff greet you in that layout and can walk you through right through getting your bike back and walking out the door with your upgrades. Can you talk a little bit about just how layout is important for a bike shop as well as its staff?
So I always joke about just the entryway. We often overlook the entryway of a bike shop. But it has to be easy for people to get into, especially if it's the door that, you know, bikes are coming in and out of for service. And if it's not easy to access, you need to have someone there as like almost a greeter to assist. Once people come inside, having a shop that's not cluttered is very important. So the person can get kind of the layout of the whole land when they walk in. So they're greeted, everything seems clean and natural, and there's a flow to the shop that you kind of get sucked right in. And then you have your salesperson there to walk them through as well. The way I used to set up my bike shop personally, and the way that I see a lot of shops do it for success, is that they have it set up so after your bike inventory is on the floor, but once you brought your bike to, you know, the service shop, it's getting prepared to go home, then you're walking your customer down what I would call like the accessory aisle. So you can, it's like a wall or it's an area of the shop where you can just walk right through. It has really good flow. And just start at like hydration, and then you go to lights and locks and pumps, and you know, then you end with helmet, shoes, and clothing. So you're not missing. You're just walking right down the aisle, not missing one thing. And you can, at least have an opportunity then where you can have a conversation with a customer. You're not selling at that point, you're educating. And it's up to them if they want to buy that product, but at least they're not getting home at that point. Say they decide not to buy a pump. They're not getting home being like, oh, that bike shop employee, they never told me. They're getting home thinking, oh yeah, he told me or she told me about that. Oh, I'll go back. You know, maybe that's what they were talking. You know what I mean? So at least you're so having the shop laid out in a way that it's natural for you to not feel like you're this, that you're selling, but you're just walking them through the shop, but it's laid out already with that forethought is really important. It's a great strategy.
Awesome. So yeah, shop layout, super important. And we talk about the value of service, which you can't sell online. Can you talk a little bit about how you would consult a shop on selling service? And second part of this question is, do you see value in annual service plans?
Yeah, so service is one of the parts of the shop that can be the biggest revenue for the shop. And it needs to be done right. You have to have a very clear and accessible service area. And you should always have a spot outside or a dedicated work stand that's your triage area. I say triage, which is a medical term, right? But it's a spot where you can really look over the bike and do your intake of the bike. So you get a nice thorough bike inspection. So I used to train the staff that when the bike comes in, there's a way that the bike is inspected, and every single bike is inspected the same way. And it starts at the handlebar stem and works methodically through the entire bike. And as the person's telling you, oh, it just needs a brake adjust. Yeah, okay, well, it needs a brake adjust, but let's look and see to make sure that I'm going to give you back a bike that's perfectly dialed in. So yes, we have these, we'd say like gold, silver, bronze packages or basic and deluxe repairs, right? And those are great. And you can usually look at a bike and put a bike into one of those categories. But every bike that comes in for repair, there's all those other things. So do the cables need to be replaced? Does the bike need new brake pads? It's an excellent time to think about a new saddle, new bar tape, or even get to the point where the repair tag is this much. Maybe the person should be looking at a new bicycle. So it's those conversations that come in, and that's having a very well-trained service technician that's doing the bike analysis when the drop-offs happen. And yeah, regarding these annual service plans, there's a lot of shops that are starting to experiment with offering, let's say, a service package, $5.99 for the whole year, or a price up front. And that's dedicated to unlimited tune-ups through the year. I think that in certain cases, that is a good idea for shops to explore. But you don't want to get yourself pigeonholed. The bike comes in and then the customer's I'm part of your service package. And then you forget to look at all those other things that might need to be addressed. So I think with repairs, never, it's not something that you should put on sale. And that is something that the industry talks about a lot. Like one shop on, Avenue A might be doing a basic repair for $25, but on Avenue B, a basic repair is $60. Well, a lot of shops would say that guy doing it for $25 is devaluing. And it's true. Service is not something that should be put on sale. It's something that we need as an industry to protect the value of, because it's an art form.
Yes, that's exactly right. And podcast guest that I had previous was Jeffrey Bryson of the Bike Room. It's Canadian Bike Mechanics School. He talked about profitability and productivity being so important. And consulting with shops to say, look, if your hourly rate is $90, you got to be able to do this in under an hour and understand that. And I know other shops have gotten it right down to the time it takes to build a bike out of the box and how many bikes can be built in an 8-hour day. Because if we're building X number of bikes a day and a good sales day in the middle of June can eradicate a week's worth of building, you know, just in floor sales, we have to have a very proficient bike building, setup or system. So I'll just kind of mosey on a little bit more. You've been in the industry quite a long time as a rider, bike shop owner, consultant, and, you know, B2B, B2C sales now. Do you think the industry at large is doing a good enough job to bring in more female riders and staff members at all levels? And can you talk a little bit about the work that you're doing with the ambassador program?
Yeah, I love that the industry has continued to talk about the importance of females in our industry. And over the years, that's definitely been a focus. And bike shop owners do see the value of having a female on staff as well as brands. I'm super fortunate to be part of Bianchi, who definitely sees the value of the role of women in shops and women being ambassadors for the brand. And we have created a women's ambassador program, which isn't focused on finding the sharpest or the fastest riders, but more so those people who are just super passionate about the bicycle and willing and desirous to share their passion with other people to get more people into the sport. So our ambassador program connects women with our retail partners, and we host events and opportunities to get women, you know, out riding, trying something new. And it's important. So a woman, it's like going to your hair salon, right? So when I go to the hair salon, I sit down and the woman does my hair and she wants to chat. And normally I'm not a super chatty person. I'm more like, you know, the athletic girl. And I don't know, I hang around with guys all the time. But the woman at the hair salon gets me talking and I feel very comfortable. And we build a relationship. And so when women are in a bike shop, they can have the ability to do the same thing for your customers walking in the door. It's they create a home-like environment. And it's like you feel like you're welcoming someone into your home, and they tend to listen a little bit longer, or just, I don't know, react maybe a little bit differently that just puts some people at ease. And women can be badass mechanics, and we can be really strong riders, and we can be super competitive. And the value of having a woman in the retail environment is great. And some women, when they come in, really, their eyes will light up if they see another woman on staff. So I think every shop, if you can find someone, and you know, I get this question often, how do I find a woman? A lot of the times you just have to drop it. You know, like if you're hosting a group ride or a clinic, say there's someone there who has another full-time job, you know, you might be like, hey, you're really cool, and I can tell you love bikes. If you ever want to work a couple nights, and you'd be surprised. You know, so you'd have to just throw it out there sometimes.
Yesterday, I had an interview with, again, a bike mechanic for Liv, and she just, was passionate about bikes. And the bike shop owner said, hey, you should do this. And now she's teaching at the bike mechanic school because, again, that passion, that energy is so important. And certain female riders, mechanics, all gravitated to that vibe and that energy. I think we could go on for hours, and I want to pick your brain about strategy. You're going to be a returning guest. I can tell for sure. But for our listeners that have been tuned into this podcast, how can folks learn more about you and the work that you do?
Oh, yeah. So I'm always eager and willing and welcome connecting with more shops or industry members. So I do have a website. Maybe you could link to the bio. It's heathermason.com. But I think the best thing, I'm on social channels like Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn, but also my opinion columns in Bicycle Retailer, or they could even send me a PM or email me, Heather at Bianchi USA. I send out a weekly email with tips and ideas and concepts to a ton of retailers across the US. And I'm always happy to add someone to the email list and always looking to get feedback and just connect with more shops.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I've got the April issue in my hand here, and definitely love the paragraph, the bullet points on planning for recovery with respect to your article in These Times Bike Retailers Have Got This. Heather, thank you so much for your time. I'm glad you were able to make it back from the woods to chat, and I look forward to discussing with you many more concepts, and certainly links to all the great work you do will be in our show notes.
Thank you. It's been a blast. Thank you so much.
Big thanks to Heather for her time. I can definitely see her being a reoccurring guest. Just with all the knowledge she has and just staying updated with what she's doing with the ambassador program and her East Coast sales management. Up next, the Friar himself. This was an interview I was very excited to just schedule, let alone record and launch and send to everybody out there. It's with Jason Quaid. He's the owner of Abbey Bike Tools. We talk a little bit about the sort of antithesis of the company, what came to be, his background, and how he continues to provide innovation and elite design and quality in the bicycle tool market. Abbey Bike Tools, everybody wants them in their toolbox. I'm fortunate to have their four-way, as well as their chain whip, double-sided Crombie, but oh boy, I want them all, at least for what is relevant to my bikes and what I work on. We talked a lot about his brand, though, because again, you know, just like the folks at Rodeo Adventure Labs, staying true to the brand, what is the DNA, that is really important to me in this podcast, and I love sharing that. It's kind of the all-star nugget of the podcast itself, is what's that main theme that we can deliver and learn from. And Jason Quaid is a no bones about it. There's no bro deals for him. There's nothing to compromise quality, price, and just the brand equity that he's developing. So really excited to talk to him. His episode is up next. Hope you're staying well. Hope you're enjoying at least a little bit of the sunshine wherever you are. And definitely thank you for subscribing to all of the platforms to stay up to date. And we'll talk to you next time. Cheers.